calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. It's the pill that will help you escape the matrix, the Tom Hartman radio program. Boy, is there a mic hot here. Some over the weekend, somebody must have bumped that button. Here, there you go, Alex, back to normal levels. Greetings, my friends. Glad to have you with us. Oh, there's so much in the news today. You will recall, 3-4 months ago, I was suggesting to you that the Republican Party was making a big mistake by their hysterical bloviating about how the Democrats are going to impeach Bush as soon as they get control of the House or Senate. There was every single it was incredible. I mean, because I give $5 a year to the Republican Party to get all their junk, right, to get on their official list. And of course, because I'm a talk show host, and they assume all talk show hosts are right-wingers, and my the end of my email is not at airamericaradio.com. Like, you know, I mean, I have one of those, but I frankly don't know how to get into it. But because it's not obvious, I guess, to the guys at the GOP, I get all their emails. I get the talking points. I get the, you know, 5-6 of these things a day, right? I get them from gopfriends.gov or .org or USA or whatever it is. And I get one from, you know, GOP leadership, and I get one from the White House. I get an email from the president from time to time. Yeah, right. And in any case, there was a period of time. This is what, the end of July? Today's the last day of July, David? 31st. Yeah, today's the 31st, last day of July. So must have been February, March, April, as I recall. I tend to think of time, you know, months time in terms of seasons, and it seems like it was starting to warm up here and the rain was going away in the Pacific Northwest. When I was 2, 3, 4, 5 times a day getting from the Republican Party and various front groups and entities associated with the Republican Party these things in the mail, in email, in postal mail and everything, saying, the Democratic Party, the party of impeachment, and warning about how if the Democrats take control of the House and the Senate, particularly the House, which is all where impeachment has to originate, you can't have impeachment if the Democrats only take control of the Senate. And impeachment, by the way, is not removal from office. Impeachment is the decision to have an indictment. It would be the equivalent of a grand jury investigation. And then if a president or a judge or an elected official is impeached, in this case in the House of Representatives, then that means he's essentially been indicted. So with Andrew Johnson, you know, the vice president under Abe Lincoln, who became president, or with Bill Clinton, the two presidents to have been successfully impeached, neither one was removed from office because then that's the indictment. Then it goes to the Senate. And in the Senate, you have the trial. And the case of Andrew Johnson and similarly Bill Clinton, who I'll be seeing tonight. In fact, I'll be emceeing a gig with Congressman Jim McDermott and Bill Clinton up in Seattle tonight. I'm really looking forward to that. And in any case, in both cases, the Senate was one vote short of convicting either one of them. So neither was actually convicted. So an impeachment is not a removal from office. It's merely the equivalent of an indictment. Most people don't realize this. But in any case, here's my point. The Republicans were just going hysterical about this. I mean, totally ballistic. They were all over the talk shows. You probably remember they were, you know, every CNN show, every Republican, Democrats, if they get on, the first thing they're going to do is impeach. They had Howard Dean on week after week.
Mr. Dean, is the Democrats' first agenda going to be to impeach President Bush? Oh, no, we're not going
to
do it.
And you had Democrats falling all over themselves in order to say, no, we don't intend to impeach Bush. And I'm watching this thing, and I'm saying to myself, first of all, the Democrats are making a mistake by denying that they intend to impeach Bush. They should just say, I don't know. Well, you know, we'll see what comes up. I mean, we're going to deal with the important political issues of the day. And if between now and the time that we take control of the House, assuming that we do, Bush has committed crimes which are worthy of impeachment, we would be failing in our responsibilities as members of the House of Representatives to conduct some sort of a hearing. And on the other hand, if everything seems hunky-dory, now that's, you know, assuming everything up until now is, then, you know, we wouldn't do it. Now, I'm of the opinion that Bush has committed so many impeachable offenses already, and frankly, removable from office, that it's way over the top. But in any case, the Republicans were going on and on and on about this, and all of a sudden it came to a screeching halt. I mean, it was like one day a switch was thrown. You haven't heard a Republican talking about Democrats impeaching Bush in at least several months. I wish I had noticed the date. I mean, I broadly noticed the week, and I'm guessing all of you have, and I don't know, maybe if you noticed the particular date, you can give us a call and let us know, but I wish I had noticed the date, because there was a point in time when it was like the water faucet got turned off. And they took it down from their logos. It used to be at the RNC headquarters, RNC.org, the main logo up at the top, the Democrats, the party of impeachment, blah, 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 blah. And they were talking about how, if they impeach the president, all the legislative activity is going to grind to a halt, and important things aren't going to happen, and stuff isn't going to get done that has to get done, and all this, and quack, 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 quack. And all of a sudden they stopped. And what I had been saying all along is, number one, the Democrats should be saying, yeah, we'll impeach him. Because the majority of the American people are behind that. Again, impeachment being the trial, not necessarily removal from office. And then, of course, there was the excuse, well, if you get rid of Bush, you got Cheney. I think they should both be impeached. They've both been guilty of these crimes. 2,500 plus American soldiers dead in Iraq. 30,000 casualties, American casualties in Iraq. 100,000 Iraqi civilians dead. The Middle East in flames. The whole world hating us. I mean, come on. As a starting point. Attempting to privatize Social Security, handing off sweetheart deals to contractors, jiggling numbers ranging from unemployment to inflation. I just the list just never ends. Well, MSNBC did a vote. This is the first actual vote on this thing that I've seen. Now, admittedly, this is one of their do it on TV votes, so it's nowhere near as solid and credible as, for example, a Zogby poll. It's not scientific polling. But it does give you a sense of things. Right? And this is the MSNBC poll that was done over the last few days. I don't have the date on it here on this printout. They should put the dates right on them. In any case, they don't. But they do list the number of responses. 292,707 people responded. That's a pretty good-sized sample. And they asked four questions. They asked one question. There were four answers. Do you believe President Bush's actions justify impeachment? That's the question. Answer number one, I don't know. Answer number two, no, the man has done absolutely nothing wrong. Impeachment would be a political lynching. Answer number three, no, like any president, he has made a few missteps, but nothing approaching high crimes and misdemeanors. And answer number four, yes, between the secret spy and the deceptions leading to war and more, there's plenty to justify putting him on trial. Those are the four answers. 292,707 responses, MSNBC poll online. The I don't know, 1.8%. Now, this is Republicans and Democrats. This is Americans, from conservatives to progressives to independents. I don't know, 1.8%. No, the man has done absolutely nothing wrong. Impeachment would just be a political lynching, 7.2%. No, like any president, he has made a few missteps, but nothing approaching high crimes and misdemeanors. 4.3%. Are you getting this? The answer, yes, between the secret spy and the deceptions leading to war and more, there is plenty to justify putting him on trial. 87%. 87%. Now, there's no way that MSNBC came up with that number, particularly with 292,707 responses. There's no way that 80% of Americans responded to the question, do you believe President Bush's actions justify impeachment, by saying yes, without there being a lot of Republicans in there. And I'm telling you, the reason why the RNC, the reason why the GOP friends, the reason why the emails I've been getting from the White House, the reason why the talking points coming out of Roger Ailes' office, the reason why all this stuff has suddenly come to a screeching halt about let's not talk about the Democrats impeaching the president anymore, is because the Republicans have figured out that when they talk about, hey, if you vote Democratic, it might lead to the impeachment of the president, there's a lot of Americans, and a lot of them are Republicans. Like here, William F. Buckley the other day coming out and saying Bush is not a conservative. A lot of Republicans saying, okay, might be a good thing. might be a real healthy thing for the United States to air some of these issues, to bring the light of day into this, to hold some hearings, to figure out what's going on, to find out if this guy has committed what the Constitution defines as high crimes and misdemeanors worthy of impeachment. And so congratulations, first of all, to the American people for 87% poll, huge poll, saying yes, Bush should be impeached. That is, again, that's the trial, not removed from office. And number two, congratulations to those members of the House of Representatives who have signed on to Representative John Conyers, I believe it's House Resolution 635, calling for simply an investigation about whether or not there should be an impeachment. 16 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Gave him the old razzle dazzle.
Oh. Hi, I'm London, and I just wanted to personally thank my Republican friends in Congress for trying to get rid of that mean old inheritance tax. I already stand to inherit a fortune, and because of you, I'll get millions more. I know the government has a lot of debt, and it has to cut benefits to our soldiers, but they're used to making sacrifices. I'm not. So thanks again, Republicans, for watching out for me. You're so high.
Gave them the old razzle-dazzle. You razzle-dazzled them. You gave them an act with lots of flash in it. Made them believe you were compassionate. Gave them the old hocus-pocus. You misdirected them. With 9/11 and Saddam Hussein.
And welcome back, my friends. 22 minutes past the hour. Yeah, thank you, Paris, for the thank you to the Republicans. Yes, indeed. I predicted on this program last week that the Republicans would figure out a way to actually allow a vote to come before the floor of the House on the minimum wage, and that they would poison pill it so that the Democrats would have to vote against it, and the Republicans would vote for it. So that coming the election time, months from now, when the average American, and we're talking 80% of Americans or more, only pay attention to politics, only pay attention to politics in the month or two before the election. And some startling percent, I forget it now, I've seen studies over the years, I guess it varies depending on election season and year and who the candidates are, but you know, some stunning number of people only pay attention to elections in the days before an election. And what are the Republican ads going to say in the days and the weeks before the November elections this fall? In congressional districts all over the United States, Republican members of Congress are going to be running ads saying, Republican Joe Blow voted for an increase in the minimum wage, but his Democratic opponent, Joe Dokes, voted against it. How dare he, at Creighton. Well, I told you they were going to poison pill it. It looks like this is how it's going to be done. The Paris Hilton tax is going to be attached to the minimum wage increase. Yep, that's what they're going to do. Bill Samuels, a lobbyist for the AFL-CIO, says this is the mother of all poison pills. Can't possibly pass the Senate. Senator Edward Kennedy, he says this is political political blackmail to say the only way that minimum wage workers can get a raise is to have a tax giveaway to the wealthiest Americans. And he's spot on correct, by the way. He says, members of Congress raise their own pay, no strings attached. Surely, common decency suggests that minimum wage workers deserve the same respect. In fact, here's Charlie Rangel on the floor of the House. He really gets into it. Charlie Rangel, he really knows how to do a rant.
My colleagues, I've been in this place a long time, but I don't remember even this close to an election, seeing the type of hypocrisy that we see today. There's only one ship that they would like to see get on the waters, and that is the state tax relief. And it's only going to provide relief for a fraction of 1% or some 7,500 individuals in the country. That is the wealthiest of the wealthy. Most Americans can't even dream about getting to the status that they're going to be liable for taxes.
So then Charlie Rangel asks rhetorically, and then answers pretty straight up, why would the Republicans attached to the increase in the minimum wage a piece of legislation that's only going to benefit 7,500 people. I mean, you would think, you know, 7,500. There are orphan diseases, orphan drugs. Well, I forget what the diseases are. Rare diseases for which drugs can be developed. And in fact, some already have, and they're not even on the market because the pharmaceutical companies won't make them because there's no profit, because there's only 5,000-10,000 people in the whole country with the disease, right? I mean, they'll just say let them die. So why would the Republicans care about 7,500 people so much that they would insert legislation to benefit those 7,500 people into legislation that's going to pass the minimum wage?
And why do they want this? They want this because if you want campaign contributions, you go where the money is. And believe me, this is the cream of the crop of the money that we have in the United States of America.
In fact, first couple hundred million dollars to support the Swift Boat veterans apparently came from one of the Walton heirs, who will receive hundreds of millions, perhaps billions of dollars as a result of this piece of legislation.
They know the bill stinks to high heavens. That's why it's not on its own 2 feet. If this was the great thing for America and democracy, one, we wouldn't wait until midnight to talk about it.
This that he's talking about, of course, is the Paris Hilton tax cut.
And two, we'd be so proud of it. The Star-Spangled Banner would be there, the lights would be shining, and we would talk about estate tax relief. But it stinks so heavy, they try to sweeten it up by putting other tax bills on it. Must be around 40 extenders here that do good work. And so they say, if you want the extenders, you got to buy this stinkeroo. But that's not enough. Whatever you do for the corporations or the rich folks, but why hold millions of Americans that are can't get an increase in minimum wage? Why would you put them on top of this? Why would you hold them hostage? And whether or not the bill passes in the other house, don't we have any shame? Aren't all of these issues important enough for this August body to take them up one by one?
No, apparently not. Denny Hastert and John Boehner, however you say it, are 2 o'clock in the morning, as Charlie Rangel talks about. They're gonna put the Paris Hilton tax cut, the Walton family tax cut, on with the minimum wage. We'll see how it shakes out. 27 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Tax cuts, made to give folks a break. What the Fed gives, states will be forced to take. But that is not my department. Sell the house, rent an apartment. Flush, and you can rush to praise tax cuts I give to you.
Except for the small problem with those tax cuts for Paris Hilton, and even for you and me, actually aren't tax cuts. Because the government is not only still spending money, it's spending more money than it's ever spent before in history. And so really what we're doing is we're borrowing the money from our children and our grandchildren. We're raising their taxes. George W. Bush has created a situation now where every baby born into the world. I was in Michigan over the weekend visiting family. We had kind of a family reunion on Saturday, and there was Aiden, my new nephew. The nephew, my brother's grandnephew, I guess, my brother's daughter's son. And my brother's now a grandfather, my younger brother. Anyway, there was Aiden, and born just last week with a $28,000 debt. He doesn't realize it yet, but he owes $28,000. His share of our national debt, $28,000. So, Bush likes to talk about the death tax. We have a very real birth tax in the United States. So, anyway, here's Charlie Rangel just wrapping up his rant on the floor of the House of Representatives about how the Republicans in the middle of the night are trying to attach the Paris Hilton tax cut, the estate tax cut, to an increase in the minimum wage, to poison pill the thing. So either the Democrats have to get so desperate to have a minimum wage increase so that they can say, yes, I did it at election time. They're going to have to do the political calculus. It may get through the House, actually. It probably won't get through the Senate, though, because you got people in the Senate who are not up for re-election. See, every single member of the House of Representatives is up for re-election. In the House of Representatives, the 435 members of the House of Representatives run for re-election every 2 years. In the Senate, the 100 senators, two from each state, run for re-election every 6 years. And so only a third of the Senate is up for re-election in any two-year electoral period. So because two-thirds of the senators are not up for election, they're not so worried about, you know, making a vote right now that might come back to haunt them 4 or 6 years down the road when they've actually probably had time to do something about, you know, cleaning it up. So, you know, here's Charlie Rangel in the House of Representatives raging about this thing.
It's almost like taking a child talking about, I want so badly to increase the minimum wage for them, and then you put these concrete shoes on them as you throw them into the ocean alone and not being able to do that, be able to swim. If you care about poor folks, act like it. Give them a day by themselves. Don't mix their problems up with the richest of the rich of this country. Hypocrisy, I've now seen it all.
And Charlie Rangel's been in the Congress a long time to now say hypocrisy. I've now seen it all. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. If you want to drop into our live chat room, go to tomhartman.com and click live chat. Hoya in Atlanta, Georgia on the line. Hey, Hoya, what's up?
Hello.
Hello, you're live and on the air.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. I'll get better. What's up?
Good. I want to answer your question about this bill, minimum wages, and what the Republicans are trying to do. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so obvious that minimum wages is a big, huge problem for the majority of Americans, and they will vote for it. And so it's very smart for the Republican to do that, just to help boost a little bit the richest of the richest. And, it's so clear to me that they don't care about the most American. And I would suggest one, you know, interesting solution would be that when the Senate or the House, they vote for a raise of their salaries, they should do the same for all the Americans.
I agree with you, Huya, but what they did during, what the Republicans did when they got control of the House and the Senate, is they changed the rules so that members of the House and Senate automatically, and the President and Vice President, automatically get pay raises unless they vote to not take the pay raise.
And they're not going to do that.
No, they haven't. As long as the Republicans have control of the House and Senate, they haven't. The Democrats could try to bring it up. The Republicans will not even allow it to come to a vote. But I agree with you. I think that the minimum wage should be tied to the wages of the members of the House and Senate. It's very simple.
Absolutely, because they are elected by the American people.
Yep.
And if you don't take care of them, I think the American people should do just one thing, is to get rid of those spoiled fruits in the basket before it's too late.
Well said, Hoya. Thanks a lot for the call.
Good to hear from you.
Nearly 15 million workers, that's 11% of the U.S. workforce, work directly or indirectly, would directly or indirectly benefit from a raise in the minimum wage to $7.25 an hour. More than a third of adults that will receive a wage raise as a result of increasing the minimum wage are the sole breadwinner for their family. And we're talking about something that's not insignificant. Nearly 37 million people, these are the statistics, by the way, from the Children's Defense Fund, if you want to track this stuff down. Nearly 37 million people live below the poverty line, including 13 million children. Among full-time, year-round workers, poverty has doubled since Ronald Reagan came into office and declared war on working people in the United States. Doubled. Doubled. From roughly 1.3 million then to roughly 2.6 million now. That's from the U.S. Census Bureau, by the way. And the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services reports an unacceptably low minimum wage is a key part of the problem. A full-time minimum wage earner takes home just $10,700, which is at least $6,000 below the poverty line for a family of three. There is the myth that most wage earners are teenagers or part-time workers. Sorry, it's a myth. 80% of those who work for the minimum wage are adults. 54% are full-time workers. And an additional 30% work between 20 and 34 hours a week and would be willing to work a full 40-hour week, but their employers won't give them more than 34 hours because then they would have to pay things like unemployment insurance or whatever. There would be other benefits available for it. So you add those two together, 54 plus 34, and that's what, 88% are either full-time workers or wannabe people who are working for the minimum wage. There's a myth minimum wage workers are entry-level or new workers. Sorry, it's increasingly difficult for minimum wage workers. This from Working USA, the Journal of Labor and Society. Increasingly difficult for minimum wage earners to move out of low-wage jobs. A recent report from the Center for Economic Policy Research shows that more than one-third of all adult minimum wage earners will still be earning the minimum wage 3 years later. This is not a starting point. Now, I remember back in the 60s and 70s before Reagan declared war on working people in the United States. And, you know, I mean, I literally remember working at a gas station and working as a waiter and being able to pay for college tuition and an apartment out of that. My wife, Louise, worked her way through college working as a waitress at a Howard Johnson's. Now, you can't do that today. Because the wages, the value of the wages has gone down so much and college tuition has gone up so much. And this is exactly what the conservatives want because it increases the class stratification in our society. It makes it harder and harder for people to move from one economic class to another, which they don't want. They want there to be a permanent underclass, a permanent disempowered underclass. I mean, that's literally the conservative philosophy. I'm not vilifying them in that. You read their writings. They actually believe it's the best thing for the United States and for the world because it creates a stable society, a highly classed society. You know, the caste system in India, 5,000-6,000 years, caste system. Very, very stable. Highly stable, but not democratic. You can't have a democracy without social mobility and without a strong middle class, period. It's just the bottom line. Gary in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Gary, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Good morning.
Good morning.
If it were up to me, and I'm not a radical, but if it were up to me, anybody making $9 an hour or less, and up to 90, I think it's 95% of the companies, you'd have to excuse some that obviously they can't really truly afford. I'd walk out.
You'd walk of what?
I'd have a national walkout.
So of minimum wage workers?
Right. If they don't come up to snuff, I would walk out.
This is one of the reasons why organizing people is so important, which is one of the reasons why the Republicans are working so hard to make it more and more difficult to organize people. I mean, you've got the National Labor Relations Board about to knock another 7 million people off, you know, make it illegal for them to be union members.
And if you'd be surprised, and if that happened, it's probably not going to happen. If that happened, you'd be surprised. They'd run to pay $9 an hour because they need these people more than the other people.
They need them right now. I mean, for example, the ones who are going to take the biggest hit, and Gary, thank you for the call and for making the point, the ones who are going to be taking the biggest hit are nurses. And nurses make pretty good money right now. You graduate from nursing school, you can get a good job in nursing for, you know, depending on where you are in the country, anywhere from 25 to 30 on the low end to as much as $60,000 to $80,000 on the high end, depending on the kind of nursing you're doing and where you are. And so what's the Bush administration response to that? Holy cow, nurses are making good money. Let's expand the H-1B visa program and bring in nurses from Bangladesh and Sri Lanka. Yes, that's the proposal that's on the table right now to deal with the nursing shortage. Build more nursing schools? No. Let's expand the number of nurses that we can import into the United States. It works for Iraq. I mean, that's their philosophy. I mean, that's what they did in Iraq. One of the first rules that L. Paul Bremer changed when he came in as viceroy of Iraq was to change the law that said that if you wanted to work in Iraq, you either had to be an Iraqi citizen or have a work permit. And he changed the law so that anybody can work in Iraq. So you've got, for example, Halliburton hiring cheap labor to do the KP stuff for the mess halls. You've got cheap labor building the U.S. embassy. Is that cheap labor Iraqi? No, it's Bangladeshis. It's folks from India, from Pakistan, from Sri Lanka, from other South Asian countries and Southeast Asian countries because they will work for cheap. And that's what they want here. That's what they want here in the United States. It's more profitable for the upper class. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I am a patriot, and I love my country, because my country is all I know. I want to be with my family, people who understand me. I've got nowhere else to go.
Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, it's just passed the House of Representatives. Two very toxic pieces of legislation. The first, increasing the minimum wage at the same time that it lowers Paris Hilton's estate taxes. The Paris Hilton tax cut have been cut. But the other one that's even more, and frankly, in my opinion, even more insidious, because this one isn't going to go anywhere, the Senate will kill it, is this so-called pension reform. Increasingly, we're seeing pensions go away and be replaced by 401ks. We were in Michigan over the weekend and sitting in the airport in Lansing on the way out reading the Detroit Free Press, and a story about these auto workers, Ford auto workers, who had put all of their 401k over the 20, 30 years, whatever, that they'd worked at Ford into Ford stock. A Ford stock that had peaked at $30 or $40, I forget what it is, back just a few years ago, and it's down around, what, $6, $7, $8 a share now. And this guy said, you know, at one point he had some $70,000, $80,000 in his 401k, and it's down to $30,000 now. So that's the difference between a pension and a defined contribution plan. The defined contribution plans are like 401ks. They're basically savings accounts. You put a little money in your savings account, and when you retire, you hope that you don't live so long that you outlive it, or you hope that you can get by on it. And in the meantime, you hope that the stock market doesn't go in the tank and that you made good investment decisions, and everybody has to become a good investment. And if you do wrong, then the cons say, hey, you know, you didn't handle your own personal responsibility. You should have become an investment expert, you know, like the guy that George W. Bush hires to manage his $1.3 billion. So, you know, on the one hand. On the other hand, a pension, which is vanishing very quickly in America. Pension says you're going to get a certain percentage of your salary, 20, 30, 40, 50%, whatever, depending on how many years you worked and all kinds of other things. You're going to get a certain percentage of your salary for the rest of your life so you can actually have a decent retirement. And that used to be the American dream. And the cons are working as hard and as fast as they can to not only destroy the American dream, and to not only keep the minimum wage low, and not only to do away with those things that might cause upward pressure on wages, like unionization, and as we were talking about earlier, but also to destroy pensions and replace them with 401ks, so that, you know, you're on your own now, Charlie. Gary in Trenton, Tennessee. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I sent you a link this morning from Harold Ford about the minimum wage discussion down here, and I got into a discussion with a Republican friend of mine who is claiming that the high inflation and high interest rates of the late 1970s were directly linked and a result of the fact that the Carter administration raised the minimum wage percentage-wise higher than any other administration in history. I disagreed with him, but I didn't have any ammunition. I couldn't get it Googled fast enough to get the information.
Yeah,
and I know you've got some information on it, and
sure.
I'd like to hear it.
Sure. Well, the fact of the matter is, Gary, that you can go all the way back to the early 1950s, and there has never been an increase in inflation that followed an increase in the minimum wage. The increase in the minimum wage has always been sufficiently modest that it didn't have that kind of, you know, huge impact through the economy. There also has always been, after the minimum wage has been increased, a slight increase in economic activity, because all those folks are, you know, these are basically people who are living from paycheck to paycheck. They get a little more money, they're going to spend it. Their spending it causes there to be more demand for products and services, which increases, you know, which strengthens the economy and creates demand for more jobs. So increasing the minimum wage is actually one of the very best ways, in a positive way, in a way that has long-lasting positive effects to stimulate the economy. The inflation, and ultimately the stagflation of the 1970s, was a direct consequence of LBJ and Richard Nixon trying to have guns and butter at the same time. You know, LBJ with his Great Society, which was a fine program, he cut poverty in half in 4 years. But at the same time, he wanted to have his war in Vietnam, and he was going to borrow to have it. And then Nixon continued that, you know, both programs, and borrowed money for them. And so, you know, by the time Carter came into office, you had a situation where, well, and Jerry Ford to some extent, you know, got the bad rap for it as well. Ford and Carter. Basically, what you were seeing was what was being wrung out of the economy was 8, 10, 12 years. I don't know how long the Vietnam War, you know, the spending associated with the Vietnam War was continuing, because it did continue after the war was over, even, you know, because you had to replace all that military hardware that got left behind in Vietnam and things. But that really is what did it. And that's what's going to do it again right now with Iraq. So you can just tell your, you know, ask your friend, just say, hey, you know, print out from 1950 to today every year, year by year, and you can find these all over the Internet, a list of all the years and what the minimum wage increase was and what the inflation rate was that year, the following year, and you'll find no correlation at all, none whatsoever. So there's your answer, Gary. Hope it helps.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate it. Alex in Indianapolis, Indiana. Hey, Alex, you want to disagree with me? You go right to the front of the line. What's up?
Yeah, it's about your union talk.
Yeah.
And by the way, I work at a gas station, and it's paying me through college and an apartment.
Good on you. Good
yeah.
on you. How much are you making?
At a gas station, I make $8 an hour.
And
not too much over the minimum wage.
You can afford college tuition on that?
Yes, I can.
That's great. That's great. That's great. That's a good. That's a,
I work at Ball State too, so I work hard and I'm paying my way through.
Good. I salute you, Alex.
I see unions as very necessary in high risk jobs, like the Sago mine disaster. That was something where unionization is necessary because it's a high risk job. It's a job where your life is on the line every minute of every day. If we start unionizing people that are selling you T-shirts at Target, that's going to drive these companies out of business.
But no, it's not, Alex, because unions are not stupid. They're not going to cut their own throat. The bottom line is that unions are the only place where you can have democracy in the workplace. It really is. Unions are democratic institutions. Union members elect their leadership. Union members vote on the decisions that are made by the union. And union members are not going to vote to make a decision that's going to cause them all to lose their own job. They're not nuts. I mean, look at 100 years of union history in the United States. It just doesn't happen. Unions don't kill companies. Bad management kills companies. Changing economies kill companies. Buggy whips being put out of business by Model Ts kill companies. Unions don't kill companies. I'm sorry. Unions are what built the American middle class. I appreciate your call, though. 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, to Talk Radio for the rest of us. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Nancy Skinner's on the line with us. She's running for Congress, the House of Representatives in Michigan's 9th District. She's the Democrat running against a Republican who is rather entrenched, Nancy.
Yes. Hi, Tom Hartman.
Hey, Nancy. Great to have you with us.
So good to hear your voice again. Can you believe it? We have 3 months to go, and I say 3 months to go and 2 years to live with the results of this election in November.
Well said. Well said. I'd point out to our listeners, this is one of our Taking Your Country Back segments for all practical purposes here. Although we're on the air on radio stations in Michigan, we're not on one in Michigan's 9th District, although our AirAmericaRadio.com podcast gets in there and Sirius Satellite Radio gets in there. But Nancy Skinner is one of those true progressive candidates out there, a good Democrat who's running for Congress against a Republican who's a very toxic Republican. And if you go to Skinner for Congress, forcongress.com, and make a contribution to her efforts, it will be... This is one of the most effective things that you can do politically is support these candidates who actually have a good chance of winning one of these congressional seats and get into place a really competent person like Nancy Skinner. Nancy and I, for our listeners, just by way of, I guess, full disclosure or whatever, you and I have known each other for, 5 years, 6 years, something like that. We used to both be on IE America Radio. You've done radio. You've done a lot of things in your life, and you're a tremendous – well, let me give you an opportunity to talk about why you should be the next member of Congress in Michigan's 9th District, Nancy Skinner.
Well, thanks, Tom. Yes, I appreciate it. We do go way back trying to get our voices out. I'm so glad at your success here and ultimately taking it to the next step. We just need to elect people this November that will be able to turn the country around. And I couldn't be in a more crucial district, I believe, because it's the home of the auto industry. And I started my career after reading, went to business school at University of Michigan, but I read Al Gore's first book, Earth in the Balance, and started working on global warming. And here it is, Tom, have you seen Inconvenient Truth yet? I'm sure you have.
I have. Yeah, it's marvelous.
All right. Well, I've been working on the issue for so long. You think you know the science, you know it all. I actually took some time Saturday night and went and saw it. And anyone who has seen that movie must understand how important the auto industry is, and turning the corner, which they are prepared to do, is the number one, I believe, challenge we have here. Because of the environment, global warming, for sure, but also because of our addiction to oil and what's going on in the Middle East and the Iraq, and of course the how much oil plays into all that. So, and that's the heavy news. The good news is we have a really great chance of winning this election. Because number of factors, obviously the rest of the world, country is so upset about what's going on, but I'm in one of these rare districts that's a 50-50 district. Mm-hmm. Our governor won it, Senator Levin won it.
The governor is a Democrat, Senator Levin is a Democrat.
Correct, and John Kerry got 49% of the vote. In fact, I was just with Senator Kerry and our governor campaigning together the other day, and that was a thrill. Mm-hmm. And so it's a 50-50 district, and I don't have a primary. I'm the Democrat, but the Republicans have a nasty primary going on right now, Tom. You wouldn't believe the commercials that he is throwing at his challenger. She's a moderate Republican running against him. He'll win, obviously, because he has the money to do it, but that's the only reason he'll win. On my blog, if you go to my website, SkinnerForCongress.com, I did a blog, and I posted this video of him, Tom, answering some questions recently, and I'll challenge anyone to go look at that video of him. He's talking about the scandals. He has a number of scandals, and trying to answer these questions, and I'm challenging anyone to say, you don't think I can beat this guy? The difference is money. The difference is enough money to go on TV to be able to respond and get our message out. But the facts are clear. And so, as you mentioned, the contributions, obviously, one of the things I'm talking about is, hey, look, we have 3 months left and 2 years to live with the results. So if you can afford $320, great, because you got 2 years to live with whatever happens. If you can afford $32, great. Every $32 that happens, or $320 if you can do it, is the
way. Why the 32, Nancy? What's the significance of the number?
We have 3 months to the election and
2 years
to
live
with those results.
Okay.
Clever, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Think about that. 2 years we're going to have to live with this. So in the next 3 months, what's that $32 mean to you? Now, another thing we've been doing all over, if people really want to get in our campaign, is because oil is such a big part of my campaign and alternative energy, we are having gas tank parties all over the country. And essentially, anyone just contributes the price of a tank of gas to my campaign.
Which is $32.
Which is about 32. But you know what? It's going to be 320 soon.
Yeah.
If things keep going this way. So you can sign up at our website, SkinnerForCongress.com, and host one of those little gas tank parties, because my district, obviously, this is all of our district, what happens with the auto industry and global warming.
Well, not only that, you are one of those candidates who could be the person who causes there to be a Democratic majority in the House of Representatives. And so much can and will come out of that if it happens. And I want to encourage my listeners to go to Skinner for Congress, F-O-R Congress, S-K-I-N-N-E-R, spelled just like it sounds, Skinner for Congress, and support Nancy Skinner. And the easiest way to support, of course, is to toss in some cash if you can afford it. If you're thinking about, what can I do? Maybe instead of going out to lunch this week, or, instead of, I was going to say
pedicure.
That movie, but then I was, that pedicure, yeah. I was going to say that movie, but then, you do want to see Al Gore's new movie. But in any case, you get the point. And I don't want this to sound like NPR or something, but it is important. I mean, this is political activism. Nancy,
I have one more thing. You can sign up and even give us your email or your friend's email and sign up, because, we've hired Joe Trippi, who ran Howard Dean's campaign, as our media guy, and the Dean campaign is running our campaign here in Michigan, Darren Behringer, his campaign manager. And, they really understand the power of the Internet, and that's what I think is different about this election, that we're going to get people, Tom, like you on radio and people on the Internet to elect candidates like myself who are true progressives and are going to affect this change. It's not the same old self-funders, as they say, that often even flounder in the end of an election, but once they get in, they don't really push for change. So it's up to you and me and people on the Internet and all that to get the truly progressive candidates in there.
Yeah, and I just have to say how much I admire that you're doing this. You know, that this is just remarkable that you're doing that. I mean, you and I were doing liberal talk radio, progressive talk radio back 4 years ago when nobody was doing liberal talk radio, and you were speaking out on these issues. And people say to me all the time, you know, I gotta run for office, and I'm like, no, I'm sorry, I don't have, frankly, the courage maybe is the wrong word, but I don't have the ability to run for political office. Not something that I'm built for. I do good radio. I can't do good politics. You are a natural politician, Nancy, and you're going to be so good at it, and I am so looking forward to you being in the House of Representatives. Some of the issues where you and your Republican opponent separate. What are the areas of cleavage that you want our listeners to know about in the minute and a half or so we have left in this segment?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're diametrically opposed. He is on the environmental chart and off the other end. The Detroit Free Press called him a one-man blizzard of budget writers to stop all progress on global warming. So, boy, what a dynamic that is, right? Can you imagine electing a woman from Detroit, the home of the auto industry, whose mission has been global warming versus somebody who's just the opposite? It's would be such a moral victory. And, you know, he headed up the biggest pork bill in history, the Alaskan Bridges to Nowhere. That's his. He's not fiscally responsible. He's all for the spending. In this little video, he talks about how great Tom DeLay is. Still, this is a recent comment. So he is so...
Wait a minute. You have a Republican opponent who is out there publicly praising Tom DeLay and the guy...
Last week,
the guy is a viable Republican candidate?
Well, this is the problem. He's got a primary August 8th, and so what's going to happen is we think she'll take a big chunk out of him, and then this race then is going to be one of those big national races, because once she takes a chunk out of him, people will see that he really is vulnerable, and that's just August 8th. So he can't, you know, you can't get out there and say Tom DeLay is a good man. I've seen him work from the inside and defend earmarks and defend scandals as he does in this video, SkinnerForCongress.com. Go to my blog. Check it out. It's really amazing, Tom.
Incredible. So Nancy Skinner, SkinnerForCongress.com, the website. What are the issues that if you're elected to the House of Representatives would be at the very top of your plate in the next 15, 20 seconds here we have?
I want to repeal the $6 billion we gave in subsidies to the oil companies in the energy bill last year, redirect it to help our auto industry start ramping up the production of hybrids, plug-in hybrids, fuel cell vehicles. This is the future. This is what we must do immediately, and it's going to take, as Al Gore said in his movie, the political will and people like me who force this issue. That will be my sole focus.
There you go. Check it out. Skinner for Congress, F-O-R, Congress, Skinner for Congress, the website. Nancy Skinner, a great person. You're going to make a great member of the House of Representatives, Nancy.
Tom, thanks so much. Appreciate it. We'll take those 32 dollars or 320, whatever you got.
There you go. Get out there, get active, and help out. Thanks a lot, Nancy, for being with us today, and good luck.
Thanks, Tom.
16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. And I wonder, yes, I wonder, yes, I wonder.
Is this the way life's meant to be? Welcome back to the home of truth and common sense in broadcasting, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, live on the line with us with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com in Washington, D.C., our senior Washington correspondent, Ellen Ratner, with us. Hey, Ellen.
Thank you. And the president today was in Miami. Now, he begins his speech today talking about how an increase in taxes means taking away money from entrepreneurs. Then he calls for more free trade. He says, listen to this logic, you're going to love it. He says the U.S. is home to 5% of the world populations. That means 95% of the world is our potential customers. Then he goes about how he's about to save the Doha round and how he and Susan Schwab, who's the trade representative, are going to try and get it back in order. Then he talks about immigration reform. He said there's a lot of document forging going on. He said there's people sneaking into the U.S. in 18-wheelers. And he says amnesty is not going to work. Deportation is not going to work. There's a middle ground. Pay a fine and learn English. And then he focuses on...
In other words, buy citizenship.
Right. Exactly.
But buy it on the cheap. I mean, right now, if you want to become a citizen of Canada, for example, I believe you have to buy $150,000 worth of property or something. There's some,
well, what you have to do is you have to either put the equivalent of $400,000 in the bank or give them the equivalent of $100,000.
Yeah, yeah. Which, you know, it's at least there's something there, but it's well, don't get me started. Also, if we're 5% of the world's population, therefore the other 95% of the world are potential customers. You could say, gee, we're 5% of the world's population, therefore the other 95% of the world might give us money. I mean, the other, I don't get it. The people in Darfur are potential customers of ours?
I mean, it's the most ridiculous logic I've ever heard, but that's why. I only report the news. He also talked about how he's given $700 million for port security, and that's not even 1 week in Iraq, and $25 billion went to the port of Miami, and therefore the ports are secure now.
I see. Even though we're still not checking cargo that comes through.
Or only 6% or something.
Yeah,
even
right.
If we check 10% of the cargo, and in the same sentence he says, well, people are coming in on 18-wheelers. Hello?
Yeah. Yeah. Ellen, I'm curious, did you go down to Miami to cover this?
No, I did not, but
okay.
we get the direct voice right through our ISDN.
Sure. I was just wondering if there were protesters there and how it was being treated and where the free speech.
Well, according to the report, there were not any visible protesters, and of course they never announced where he was having dinner last night, and he had it at that famous crab place, Joe's Crab.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're doing is they're not announcing exactly on the manifest where people are going, so it doesn't get leaked to the protesters.
Yeah, is this how they used to do it in the Soviet Union?
Right.
I mean, the parallels for.
When I sit at the White House, I sit next to the Pravda reporter,
right.
And we always joke back and forth that it doesn't look that different than the Soviet Union to him.
Yeah, there's no Pravda in Izvestia and no Izvestia in Pravda, right?
By the way, Mr. Boehner, who, as you know, is the majority leader in the House, sent a little memo out to his House folks announcing what the sort of words of the day are during the month that everybody's home from the House in their districts. And
mm-hmm.
They are keep America prosperous, secure the borders and enforce the law, strengthen national security, spend taxpayer money wisely, and bolster American energy and lower gas prices. That is their notes for the next 5 weeks.
And the only sentence that's missing is, and if you want to do most of these things, elect a Democrat. I mean, the Republicans have had control of this thing for 5 years, and they've failed to do any of this stuff.
One last interesting thing. The FDA took a quick move today on Plan B. Remember, that was they must be worried about the election.
Yeah, Plan B. Plan B is a birth control pill. It's a contraceptive.
Right.
It's not an abortion drug. That because the reality is most people don't realize this, that when somebody has sexual intercourse and pregnancy results from that, it actually takes about 2 or 3 days for the sperm to make its way to where the egg is hanging out in the fallopian tubes and fertilize them. So if you can get a birth control, if you can get the hormones in the bloodstream early enough, it'll prevent that fertilization from ever happening. And if you can do it in the first 2 or 3 days, and so it's very useful for rape victims, and it's also useful for people I didn't plan it, you know. But the anti-abortion guys and the anti-birth control guys are totally opposed to it.
Well, my friend Dr. Susan Wood, actually, she resigned from the Office of Women's Health at the FDA over this issue. But now they're apparently talking to Bar Laboratories, whose drug this is, and talking about the steps they might need to take to be able to sell this to people over 18.
So they're going to roll this thing out just before the election?
You got
it. But that's going to hurt their base, won't it?
Well, they're not worried about their base right now because their base.
They've thrown their base so many bones.
Right. Base is going to say, oh, we, the base will get out. This is a calculated deal they're making.
Yeah. So they've got the base solid. Now they're going for the middle.
Exactly.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. The political calculus of all of this. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Ellen, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Great talking with you today. 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with your phone calls and more right after this. Life at Wartime, the latest from the war-torn Middle East. On the Tom Hartman radio program, Truth in Broadcasting for a Change here in America.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
On September 12, we had the world on our side. But George Bush, he started to divide. He cut off the UN and our allies too. And now he wants to drive a wedge between me and you. But fear didn't make America great. Fear didn't make America great. Fear didn't make America great. Fear didn't make America great.
And welcome back.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Amen. Amen. Welcome back for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity, the Tom Hartman radio program. Time now to take a look at what the situation is with regard to our occupation of Iraq.
I want to know who the men in the shadows are. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are. But they're never the ones to fight and to die. And there are lives in the balance.
And welcome again. Yeah, it definitely is. The following are the security and other developments in Iraq on Monday as of 0700 GMT. This is from Reuters. Dateline Baghdad. A civilian and a policeman were wounded when a car bomb went off near a police patrol in northern Baghdad. In Mosul, two civilians were wounded when a roadside bomb went off near a joint Iraqi-U.S. military patrol in that northern city. In Baghdad, gunmen killed Maad Jihad, an advisor to the health minister in the Mansour district of Baghdad. And also in Baghdad, gunmen killed Farki Salman, a brigadier in the Iraqi National Intelligence Service in the Armouk district of Baghdad, according to an Interior Ministry source. This, on top of this now, 52%. 52%. The percentage of Americans who want all, that's A-L-L, all U.S. troops withdrawn from Iraq within 12 months, according to a new Gallup poll. In the summer of 1970, only 48% of Americans wanted U.S. troops withdrawn from Vietnam within 12 months. And by the way, I think that that all is a real significant thing. Because we're building right now in Iraq what is going to be the largest so-called embassy in the world. It's not an embassy like, gee, think an embassy, it's a building, right? No, this is not, this is a city. We're building a city inside the green zone inside Iraq. It covers 104 acres. It's got over 20 some odd buildings. We're talking high-rise apartments, Olympic swimming pools, five-star restaurants, fancy hotels for visiting dignitaries. It'll house over 22,000 people permanently. It is the only construction project in the country of Iraq that is coming in on time and under budget. And a lot of Iraqis looking at all these cranes and all this construction. And by the way, we don't hire Iraqis to build it. We're bringing in, we've hired American contractors. And they, in order to save costs, in order to make increased profits, increase the CEO salaries and the money for the stockholders, they're bringing in cheap labor from Bangladesh and Pakistan. And the Iraqis are looking at these folks going, uh-uh, don't think this is right. There's just something fundamentally wrong about this. But it's the American way. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. TomHartman.com, our chat room, or our website. If you want to drop into our live chat room, just click live chat up at the top. If you want to participate in the message board, click message board. Julian in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Julian, what's on your mind today?
Hi. You're going to see President Clinton tonight, is that right?
I am, although I'm emceeing a gig that I think he's doing two fundraisers up in Seattle, one for Maria Cantwell and one for Jim McDermott. I'm at the Jim McDermott one, and so my guess is he's going to run in, do a shtick, and run back out again.
Oh.
I don't think it's not going to be like Bill and Tom having a conversation.
I see. Okay. I was kind of hoping if it wasn't too inappropriate, you'd have a chance to ask him if he would still support NAFTA or not, but it sounds like you won't have a chance anyway.
I doubt it, and it wouldn't be the appropriate venue. I hope, you know, some such venue occurs, and he is asked that question. And odds are, I haven't Googled it. I don't know. Maybe the folks in the chat room can check this out. Maybe somebody has. But I'm guessing, since he works so hard to get it passed, that he would not back off from it. He would probably instead talk about how it's not been implemented properly because the Bushies have cut out the wage and environmental protections and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I'm just speculating. As you know, I'm opposed to NAFTA and all these trade agreements. I think we should go back to a tariff-based trade system. Just, you know, very straightforward, that industry by industry decides what industries are really critical to remain here in the United States, and which industries can we say, okay, that one can go and that one can go. But, you know, under NAFTA and under CAFTA and under the WTO, we don't get to make those decisions. Multinational corporations get to make those decisions. And by and large, they're making the decision that all industries can go overseas.
Yeah. So,
Julian, thanks for the call, though.
Okay.
We'll see. You never know what to, you never know what's going to happen. Hey, Jude in Seattle. Hey, what's up?
Hey, we're welcoming you tonight, Tom. Thanks for coming.
I am looking forward to being in Seattle. What's up?
Our city's kind of fractured because of last week, but I just real quickly, I wanted to bring to the listeners the NAFTA Superhighway and ask anyone that's interested to get a hold of Representative Kaptur, K-A-P-T-U-R. She's working against this, and it's just real frightening to think that it's already been approved and will start construction next week. And for the listeners that don't know, it's going to be a 10-lane superhighway coming out of Mexico up. It'll be aligned with Interstate 35, and it will have its base up in Kansas City, of all spots.
Right, that'll be the first customs station.
That'll be the first customs states. And then when you were talking earlier about our unions, the plan will be to bypass the Longshoremen's Union and also the Teamsters. And I've been in touch with the Teamsters Union, and they have people that are trying to get this stopped. So I would really encourage individuals to look that up. And also the SPP, which is the Security Prosperity Partnership Agreement that Bush signed.
Which is what the NAFTA Superhighway is coming out of, by the way. SPP.gov is the official government website for this, for our listeners who want to check this thing out. Pardon my interrupting you.
No, that's all. I just thanks very much for all you do, Tom.
Sure, and all thanks for the call. Yeah, and I would say that Congresswoman Kaptur is not the only one who's very concerned about this. There are a lot of members of Congress who are very concerned about this on both the left, right, and the center. You know, all three, and it's. On the one hand, it is the absolute natural, logical, predicted, kind of built into it consequence of the original NAFTA agreement back from, you know, the 1996-97 when Clinton pushed this thing through. And on the other hand, it was a 98, I forget which. And then the other is that it also came out, this latest iteration of it, this latest version of it, came out of this meeting that was held in March of last year, March of 2005. In Waco, Texas, appropriately enough. You know, it's a wacko plan that was held in Waco, and where Vicente Fox and the Prime Minister of Canada at the time, I think that was Mr. Martin, I may be wrong, and George W. Bush got together and said, or maybe it was Mr. Harper, got together and said, okay, you know, let's lay this thing down. Let's lay this thing down. Let's make it so that the Chinese can bring things into the ports in Mexico, and they can be offloaded without longshoreman labor, and they can be shipped across the United States without Teamster labor, and they can make it all the way to Canada and or into New York City or into Michigan or into Northern California or wherever, anywhere in the United States, and just make it really easy. We don't need no stinking national boundaries. We don't need no stinking unions. This is about the great leveling. This is about the world is flat. Which reminds me of Thomas Friedman, by the way. David Sirota outed Thomas Friedman yesterday. And this is really, truly, you know, kind of falls into the category of pretty mind-boggling stuff. You know, PMS, pretty mind-boggling stuff. It's Thomas, David's laughing. I didn't even get the acronym until after it was out of my mouth. Sorry. In any case. For a long time, we've been wondering, why is it that Tom Friedman parrots, as David Sirota wrote, parrots the propaganda of big money, using his New York Times column to legitimize some of the worst, most working-class persecuting policies this country has seen in the last 100 years, all while bragging on television that he doesn't even bother to read the details of the policy he advocates for, which is the case. Actually, the other day he was asked if he supports the Doha Free Trade Agreement, and he said, I haven't even read it, but if it says free trade, I support it. And David Sirota says, I've always believed that his perspectives came from the bubble he lives in. Well, today he discovered what that bubble is. Washingtonian Magazine does this fawning profile of Tom Friedman. Turns out he married into one of the 100 richest families in the United States. Real estate empire valued at $2.7 billion. That's the guy who's telling us how to do our trade policies. 44 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Why don't we liberate these United States? We're the ones who need it worse. Let the rest of the world help us for change, and let's rebuild America first. Our highways and bridges are falling apart. Who's blessed? Who has been cursed? There's things to be done all over the world, but let's rebuild America first.
You tell him, Merle Haggard, let's rebuild America first. Yes, indeed. Welcome back to the program. 10 minutes before the hour, I'm Tom Hartman with you. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. And Matthew in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Hey, Matthew, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for all that you do.
Sure.
I'm calling to let you and your listeners know about a program on the main C-SPAN channel tomorrow night at 6:10 p.m. Eastern Time. It's called the American Scholars Symposium on September 11 and the Neocon Agenda. The presenters can now prove what 42% of Americans believe, that there was a cover-up of what really happened on September 11 and that the official government story is not true. The video is also streaming at 911truestory.com. Speakers from the conference include Dr. Stephen Jones. He's a professor of physics at Brigham Young University, retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Bob Bowman, who is running for the U.S. House from Florida District 15, and Dr. James Fetzer, founder of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. Just hoping that you and your listeners will tune in to C-SPAN tomorrow night. That's Tuesday, the 1st of September at 6:10 p.m. to watch the conference.
Okay. Great plug, Matthew, and sounds like a fascinating program. Thanks a lot for the tip.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Larry in Seattle. Hey, Larry, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. You made a statement a couple of days ago about the two bombs dropped on Japan at the end of World War II as being both uranium devices, and in fact the second one, which
was
known as Fat Man, was indeed a plutonium device, an implosion device.
Yeah, you're right.
So just that correction there.
Thank you.
But we're looking at the battlefield in Lebanon right now, and the Hezbollah gaining more powerful, more accurate weapons.
Are they gaining them, or are they simply deciding to use weapons that they had all along that they were holding back?
I think that they're gaining new ones because
how?
The newest ones that they're gaining from Iran are these C-802 cruise missiles that are not Iranian in manufacture. They're Chinese.
Yeah, and I mean, how are they getting this stuff? I mean, Israel has essentially shut that country down. They blew up the airport. Stuff is not flying in. They've got the ports.
Well, they may not be getting them today, but they may be taking them apart, putting them back together. They've got porous borders with Syria, so they could be coming right through Syria. They could even be coming through Iraq.
I'm real skeptical about it. And this isn't a pro or anti-Hezbollah thing. I'm just real skeptical about it. The Israeli intelligence and U.S. spy satellites and all that stuff, I think at this point Hezbollah is using whatever they've had all along. By all along, I mean, up till this began.
Well, the 802 is a fairly recent device.
Yeah, well, they might have gotten it a month ago. I mean, I don't know, but it just did. It seemed. I think the whole Israeli strategy the reason why they took out the airport to begin with isolate them and then exhaust their weaponry so that they can then go in and essentially take out people who've been disarmed.
If the Israeli intelligence and U.S. satellite imagery was so accurate, then we shouldn't have had any role in killing 50 civilians with bombing on a cannon just recently.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's assuming that it was entirely unintentional.
But we have a very difficult time using any kind of leverage against China because we owe them so much debt now. And China seems to be the major supplier of so many of these more sophisticated arms into the Middle East.
Yeah.
Through Iran or through Syria. And because we owe China so much money, we've made them a major player on the world stage now.
Yep.
But they managed to keep under the covers in the shadows. And I think more needs to be pointed out about China's role in these various...
But the problem, Larry, with doing that is that that would work against the interests of Walmart and the Walmart billionaire heirs who just got Congress to pass a special law just for them to attach to the minimum wage law. I mean, you know, the whole infrastructure of multinationalism of the New World Order requires that we have repressive regimes who are willing to provide us with slave labor.
And not only that, but Walmart also managed to get that law that was going to make them have to pay for health care, and Maryland was
shut
canceled.
Down. Yeah, yeah, and Chicago now is pushing through this thing where Walmart has to pay $10 an hour, and they're fighting that. Larry, I got to move along, but thank
sure.
you for the call and the heads up. It's
right.
Thought provoking. I appreciate it. Speaking of this legislation, that 2 a.m. Saturday morning. Yeah, I said it just passed. I've been out of the loop over the weekend. I was in Michigan at family business Friday, Saturday. And Sunday, I was on an airplane all day, or a series of them. But at 2 a.m. on Saturday morning, which amazing, the House of Representatives passed a bill that links a $2 increase, this from thinkprogress.org, in the minimum wage to a dramatic cut in the estate tax for millionaires. And here's Congressman Zach Wamp, the Republican from Tennessee, putting it in the nose, you know, just shoving this right in the face of the Democrats.
Yes. The other side says all the time, well, you run this place, you've got majorities in the House and the Senate, and I want to remind them that we do. And if we didn't want to do this, we wouldn't do it. But you know why we're doing it this way? Because this is the better way to do it. Because the small business people and the family farmers need certainty in terms of this estate tax. We eliminated it, but it comes back. It is an onerous tax. It's an unfair tax. And when you raise wages, which is a fixed cost in business, you have to compensate that with smart business investments through tax policy. Our tax policy has been good for America. All right?
Now, keep in mind, the Paris Hilton tax cut that he's talking about is going to affect 7,500 Americans. 7,500 Americans are going to get the Paris Hilton tax cut that he's talking about. And none of them are small farmers or small businesses.
Economic policy is good for America. And frankly, this wage increase is a savvy way to put it all together and make this medicine for America go down smooth and keep our economy strong. Because this will force some fixed cost up in small business. And you can't just throw it on them without some people losing their jobs. And this is a fair and responsible way to do it. I know why you're so mad and why you say things you don't really mean. It's because you've seen us really outfox you on this issue tonight.
You've seen us outfox you on this issue tonight. Republicans bragging about how they put a poison pill that will not make it through the Senate on the minimum wage to make sure that the minimum wage does not get passed. They attached the Paris Hilton tax cut to the minimum wage in the House of Representatives, 2 a.m. Saturday morning. 57 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here. We'll be back with Alec Dubrow, Mark Carlin, and more. Right after this.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you in the third hour of our program. A new military flashpoint. A new military flashpoint. The Taiwan Strait. Nobody's looking, right? Nobody's looking. Oh, man. Here we have North Korea is building nuclear weapons. Pakistan is building nuclear weapons. India, with the help of the United States, is going to be building nuclear weapons. And the president, well, the president's dealing with the crisis of stem cells. But this in the Christian Science Monitor. There is a new flashpoint, a new military flashpoint in the region, the Southeast Asian region, the Taiwan Strait, that is in the midst of missile tensions. They say a private TV station reported earlier this month that Taiwan's military was preparing to test fire a tactical missile in September capable of striking targets in China. Now, you know, there's the two main parties in Taiwan, at least two of the main parties in Taiwan, have as, you know, at the core of some of their major differences, the debate over whether whether Taiwan should declare itself independent of China, which would be tantamount to declaring war with China, because China has said, no, Taiwan is not a nation, it's a state, it's a province of China, and someday we will reabsorb her. And the Taiwanese have been saying, no way, but we'll go along with this pretense because you're bigger and you're right next door to us. As the walls, and to read, you know, this is just Simon Montlake's piece in the Christian Science Monitor. In the event of an imminent attack, now keep in mind, China right now, in terms of military spending, is number two in the world behind the United States. We spend more money militarily right now than all the other countries in the world combined. But among all the other countries in the world, number two right now is China. And if, and an awful lot of that is going to missiles and other things that are pointed at Taiwan. And as Simon Montlake points out, in the event of an imminent attack, Taiwan would be justified in launching a preemptive strike against military targets, and China runs the hawkish argument. Now, you could argue that this is because we've established that, hey, preemptive strikes are just fine. I mean, we did a preemptive strike against a country that didn't even represent any threat to us. As a Christian Science Monitor writes, this should go hand in hand with improved defenses on the island, including advanced interceptor missiles and attack aircraft, says Li Wen-chung, a government legislator in Taiwan. Even if we are going to buy U.S.-made Patriot missiles, we also need to develop our own offensive missiles. Simon Montlake points out, such attitudes present a dilemma for the U.S., which is reportedly urging Taiwan to back off its missile program. U.S. diplomacy in the region is a balancing act between deterring China from invading Taiwan and restraining President Chen Shui-bian on the issue of Taiwanese sovereignty. This is just a very messy situation. Taiwan's, as the Christian Science Monitor points out, Taiwan's indigenous missile program includes a cruise missile with a 1,000-kilometer range and an anti-ship missile that could reach Chinese naval bases. Since 2001, Taiwan's politicians have sparred over a U.S. offer to sell arms valued between $10 and $19 billion. The deal was designed to shore up defenses against a rapidly modernizing Chinese army. So here we are, we're supplying China with money. I mean, trillions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars a year in surplus, and giving China the ability, the means, the necessity, frankly, to buy big chunks of the United States. Right now, most of what they're buying is our debt, but they're also buying our companies. So at the same time we're doing that, we're selling Taiwan $19 billion worth of weapons to point at China. Taiwan is currently targeted by around 800 Chinese-made missiles that would reach the island within 7 minutes of being launched. And then they add one wild card is the run-up to Taiwan's 2008 presidential election when Chen, the current president of Taiwan, is expected to turn up the rhetoric on Taiwanese sovereignty to rally his base. That could provoke China into the kind of saber-rattling that erupted in 1996 when it test-fired missiles off the coast. And, you know, why should we worry about this? Well, it's, we said, hey, what's the big deal? There's just a war going on in Europe. Back in the 1930s. And then pretty soon Japan said, no, we're in this thing too. We're in this thing too. Speaking of we're all in this thing too, there's happening all over the planet. Here's the U.S. version of it. If you think you can't divorce things like nuclear power and global warming. In fact, if you think that the answer to global warming, greenhouse gases, the answer, how can we have electricity if we don't burn coal, if we don't burn oil, if we don't burn natural gas, which take carbon, which has been stored in the earth for 300 million years and throw it into the atmosphere where it produces global warming. If you think that the answer to that, as the Bushies clearly do, is nuclear power, think again. This story is a twofer. The first part about what's going on in the United States. This is from the Associated Press. More than 60% of the United States now has abnormally dry or drought conditions. 60% of the United States, stretching from Georgia to Arizona and across the north through the Dakotas, Minnesota, Montana, and Wisconsin. This is from Mark Svoboda, a climatologist for the National Drought Mitigation Center at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln. He said an area stretching from south-central North Dakota to central South Dakota is the most drought-stricken region in the nation. He calls it the epicenter. But it's happening all over the country. Crops are dying. Livestock is dying. The price on livestock has fallen through the floor because everybody's trying to unload their cattle because they can't water them. If they don't get rid of them, they're going to die. As the Associated Press notes, farm ponds and other small bodies of water have dried out from the heat, leaving the residual alkali dust to be whipped up by the wind. Brad Ripley, a Federal Agriculture Department meteorologist in Washington, said this year's drought is continuing one that started in the late 1990s. He says the 1999 to 2006 drought ranks only behind the 1930s and the 50s as third worst drought in the period in record period. But we're still, we may just be in the beginning of it. They talk about this guy, Harold Shoemaker. He owns a livestock company and auction in South Dakota. In May, June, and July last year, his company sold 3,800 cattle. During the same months this year, it's 27,000 cattle. Why? Because he says these 100 degree days are just killing us. People can't water their cattle. They got to get rid of them. So here we are, as George Bush pointed out this morning in Florida, 5% of the world's population. As he didn't point out, we contribute 25% of the world's greenhouse gases, leading to the warming of the planet, which is leading to an increase in demand for air conditioning, which is causing people in the United States anyway to burn more fossil fuels, which is throwing out more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. Well, the solution in Europe, let's try nuclear power. Except for this. This from yesterday's Observer, the affiliated paper with The Guardian of the United Kingdom, the newspaper. European heat wave has forced nuclear power plants to reduce or halt production. The weather blamed for deaths and disruption across much of the continent has caused dramatic rises in the temperature of rivers used to cool the reactors, raising fears of mass death for fish and other wildlife. You get this? They're having to shut down the nuclear plants because the nuclear plants require cold water, and it's so hot, the cold water's hot. Spain shut down the Santa Maria de Garona reactor in the River Ebro, one of the country's eight nuclear plants, which generate a fifth of its national electricity. Reactors in Germany are cutting output. Others in Germany and France have been given special permits to dump hot water into rivers to avoid power failures. Even though this is going to cause massive death of fish, France, where nuclear electricity or power provides more than three-quarters of electricity, is also now having to import power to prevent shortages. They point out the problems have come to light just weeks after Britain declared it will build a new generation of nuclear power stations, prompting opponents to claim the crisis proves nuclear reactors, although they emit no carbon dioxide greenhouse gases, are not a solution to the problem of global warming. Well, you could say they emit no carbon dioxide greenhouse gases, but in the process of mining uranium, refining uranium, transporting uranium, and disposing all of this stuff, at the moment anyway, consumes enormous amounts of oil. Although one can hope that there will be renewable sources of energy that will do it. So it seems like, you know, it's all bad news, right? We have the prospect of war in the Far East, where there is war in the Middle East going on, and global warming producing all these problems. What we need right now is good, competent leadership in the United States. There are all of these problems present opportunities. The problems of war represent opportunities to create lasting peace. The problem of global warming creates an opportunity for us to transition into an economy and a whole brand new world, an economy based on renewable resources. What's lacking? The political will to do it. What's lacking? Well, what's obstructing? The Republican Party, basically. All the more reason that we all get politically active and get active now. 17 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 22 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here. You should tell listeners they can load my... welcome back. 22 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman radio program. Alec DeBrow is with us. He's the media coordinator for the International Labor Communications Association, ilcaonline.org is the website. Hey, Alec, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. You play the Kinks for me?
For us.
For us. For
all of us who can remember.
That's right. Well, welcome from the heart of global warming, Washington, D.C.
Indeed. Two things I want to bring up with you, Alec. The first is that the Chicago City Council is talking about forcing Walmart to pay a living wage. But they're not forcing them to accept unions, and it seems like if they did the latter, they wouldn't have to do the former. And the second is about unions in China, but let's go for it here.
Okay. Chicago City Council passed an ordinance requiring big box stores to pay a minimum wage of $10 an hour, but by 2010. And if $3 an hour worth of benefits, and they passed it by enough of a margin so that they can override a veto by the mayor who threatens to veto it. Very interesting. Walmart responded by saying, it's sad this put politics ahead of working men and women. This means Chicago is closed to business. And just lest you think this is only Walmart, apparently Target has met with a number of African-American aldermen in Chicago and told them that they would cancel or delay stores in those neighborhoods if this passes. So it is a big battle, and it's very interesting, and you're sort of right about the lack of union representation. But the truth is the battle for workers' rights has always been two-pronged in this country. It's been both legislative and it's been organizing itself. The 8-hour day, you know, was a national campaign. It wasn't a specific union campaign.
Yeah, but my point is we shouldn't be in such a sad state of affairs. We shouldn't be in a situation where we have to have members of a city council doing work on behalf of labor, of workers, that workers themselves should have the power to do.
Well, you're absolutely right. But the fact is, for most of our history, the courts have sided with employers, and that's why they've had to do this. Yeah, it's terrible. You know, the number of employers now who resort to union busting consultants is at an all-time high. At least three-quarters of them do.
No, it's a growth industry. You've got all these guys whose jobs got, you know, all these white-collar workers whose jobs got outsourced to India. They need something to do, so they're becoming consultants to bust unions.
Well, apparently there's 2,000 people who specialize in this, and the fascinating thing is that companies spend an average of $2,000 to $3,000 per worker to keep unions out.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
That is truly amazing.
Yep.
Now, I understand that China has just said to Walmart, you're going to have to unionize, which sounds like good news. The bad news is that in China, the union is the only official union.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a number of countries, but probably worse in that Sam Gompers, the founder of the American Federation of Labor, used to say here, a bad union is better than no union at all. I'm not sure that's the case in China, where it's an element of control by the central government.
Right.
No, I don't see this as an advantage in that particular country.
And yet Walmart is going to be able to say, well, you know, you've in fact, wait until you see the stickers on stuff in Walmart that says union made.
I'm not looking forward to it.
Do you think they'll do it?
only if their focus groups tell them it'll work.
It wouldn't surprise me in the least.
It wouldn't surprise me. On the other hand, just next door to China, if I might add this, I understand we got a short show today. A few days ago, as they have every year, the union at Hyundai Motor concluded a strike, ending in a 5.1% increase in salary.
Good.
And those are free unions, so you see the difference between when you have them and when you don't have them.
There you go. Alec Dubrow, he's the media coordinator at the International Labor Communications Association, ILCAonline.org. Alec, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Wake up and shake it up, America. From north to south, from east to west, from sea to shining sea. Our government gives a fight for we the people who can't ignore that we shall reap what we sow, so we better sow carefully.
And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where we run rings around the right wing 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, right here on this program, right wherever you may be listening to us. In the chat room, you can get to the chat room by going to tomhartman.com. Sue put up some new little faces, icons, I guess they're called, or emoticons. And one is obviously Rama, and the other is me. I can see my own face in chat. How spooky is that? Mark Carlin is with us. He's the editor, the senior editor, and founder of BuzzFlash.com. Hey, Mark, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Tom.
Great to have you with us. All right, this is our best of the rest of the news segment, just looking over what's been going on over the last week here. It's Monday, and let's just kind of take an overview of the day. Bush and Congress show nearly record low ratings, while Democrats are viewed more favorably in the CBS New York Times poll. First of all, what's the news end of this, Mark? And then secondly, how do you think this is going to shake out in November, particularly given what Bobby Kennedy has told us about what the Republicans are capable of?
The Republicans under Karl Rove's tutelage have been excellent at pulling last-minute surprises, particularly in using emotional issues to press the hot buttons of Americans. Just before elections, we saw the Osama tape come out just before the 2004 election, and most analysts now say that Osama was indeed probably trying to help Bush get elected. Plus, we do have, as Robert Kennedy and many, many others before him, and there's been a whole movement, as you know, including yourself, who have talked about the potential for election fraud with electronic voting machines and through a variety of other means, as we saw in Ohio, voter suppression. There's any number of ways. In Georgia, we have a law that's on hold right now, but possibly will go into effect, the Jim Crow law, which would require voter IDs and therefore reduce minority voting. And the Republicans are all about voter suppression and miscounting the vote to achieve victory. So anything can happen. I think these polls mislead the Democrats to believe that they can win by default. But I think they're going to have to win by playing an aggressive political game, which they really haven't shown yet that they're capable of.
Yeah, it really is the case that the Democrats are... I'm really torn about this, Mark. On the one hand, I really like the fact that the Democratic Party still values integrity, still values honesty, has a certain amount of naivete to it, actually values democracy. That is to say that they don't just allow dissent within the Democratic Party, it's actually encouraged. Whereas the Republican Party is run increasingly like a kingdom, or something between a kingdom and a fascist state, our leader at the top, and everybody has to march in lockstep. And yet at the same time, there's a very real political danger to the Democrats being democratic, small d democratic.
Well, I think that it is a classic conflict we've seen, particularly under the Bush administration, between authoritarianism with the paternal, if you want to call it the daddy state, where you always believe the father is right, you don't question, and you just eat your peas and shut up, versus the family that sits down and has a conversation with an exchange of opinions. That's been the basic dynamic. But I would contend it's not just the Democrats have more integrity and therefore won't play the kind of dirty pool that the Republicans play. We historically have seen a lot of Democrats play dirty pool, particularly in machine politics. And we're from Chicago, and it's had a very nasty history of machine politics,
sure,
much less so now. But the issue is really, can Democrats show that they have courage? If you look at Luis Obrador in Mexico, he showed he got out over 2 million people yesterday,
mm-hmm,
to protest the way that the elections were held there. We don't see the Democrats getting people out. We didn't see Al Gore in 2000 or John Kerry in 2004 to protest the way the Republicans were handling the vote from a variety of methods.
Right, or Busby in the last few months.
You see a candidate, Obrador, who is demanding what one should have in a democracy, which is in the full and complete recount. I think some people were misled into thinking there was a recount in Mexico. It was kind of what happened in Florida. What they did was they simply went over the tallies again, but they didn't recount every vote, and that's what Gore wanted in Florida. That's what Obrador wants in Mexico. Obrador fought for it. Al Gore didn't in 2000.
Well, actually, Al Gore did fight for it. George Bush sued him in the Supreme Court. The whole basis of the Bush v. Gore lawsuit was to stop the recount that the Supreme Court of the state of Florida had ordered at the request of Al Gore.
Well,
let's give Al Gore a little credit here, Mark.
He you're right, and I stand corrected. And I think the new Al Gore would lead an Obrador type of courageous outpouring to demand a vote. Let's put it this way. When the Supreme Court decision came down, I think Al Gore gave up too easily.
Well, yeah. At that point, it was either give in or rip the country apart. And that's in his mind. I wouldn't agree. I wouldn't make that statement. But,
well, I think you have to. You don't have to become a sleazeball to beat the Republicans, but you have to have the courage to fight. And the Democrats give up too quickly because they perceive the Republicans are stronger than they are based on the Republicans making a perception that they're stronger. So
it's a battle
over perception.
Yeah, and then you've got folks like James Carville who are, these consultants who, by the way, is down in Mexico consulting with the conservatives. Suggesting, at least I believe so, suggesting that the Democrats should just become like the Republicans. And I remember talking with Professor Jack Forbes, a Native American professor of Native American studies at University of California, Davis, many years ago, back in 1986, when I was writing my book, Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. And I devoted a chapter to this, in fact, in the book, about how Native Americans, when they were confronted with overwhelming forces, and principally technologically overwhelming, but also forces that they considered psychotic, people who were willing to engage in genocide, because most Native American communities and tribes, you know, if they had warfare, it was very, very limited, and it never had the goal of wiping out another people and taking their land, because their land had the ghosts and the ancestors and everything. You just didn't want it. And he said, you know, that the Europeans were infected with what they refer to as wetiko, which is a mental illness of cannibalism, essentially, eating the souls and spirits of others. But he said that the Native Americans were confronted with basically just a couple of very few choices. One was to run away, which is what, for example, the Shoshone did. They didn't even have a word for war in their vocabulary. They just ran away every chance they. But they lived in the desert in Nevada, so, I mean, there was always some place to run to. Number one, they could run away. Number two, they could get slaughtered, which many, many Native Americans did. They just, you know, they took the Gandhi approach and they got slaughtered. Or number three, they could become their enemy and fight back, which a few tried. But the enemy was so, you know, so powerful, they were overwhelmed. And he said, these are really horrible choices, to become insane like the enemy. And I'm really concerned about those who suggest that the Democrats should become like the Republicans.
I think the Democrats have to become leaders. I think they've lost the sense, quite literally, that you can lead Americans. They believe opinions and thoughts are fixed. They believe wedge issues are fixed. We're a country that's been evolutionary in nature and has constantly changed.
Yeah.
And the Democrats somehow seem to think everything is frozen in place now, and they have to accept the Republican stance on this, that this is a conservative country. Actually, it's quite a progressive country when you get down to the issues.
Yes.
The battle has been over the perception of leadership, and the Republicans, for whatever their faults are, have the perception of leading. They may be leading us over a cliff, but they have the perception of leading. The Democrats don't seem to be leading us anywhere.
Yeah, good point. Mark, we've got about 2.5 minutes or so left here. The headline at BuzzFlash.com, we're talking with Mark Carlin, the founder and editor of BuzzFlash.com. The headline at BuzzFlash.com is one of your news analyses, which are always brilliant. This one is titled, Bush to Armageddon, Bring It On. Can you give us the one-minute summary of it?
Basically, there are two things that I think are very important that's happened within the last week. One, of course, is the Israeli war with Lebanon, Hezbollah in Lebanon, but basically Hezbollah and the nation of Lebanon, unfortunately. But that's actually been very fortuitous in a very suspicious way, because we no longer see any news about the war in Iraq, which has completely deteriorated to the point that Bush is putting extra troops into Baghdad. Secondarily, some of these airstrikes that have killed civilians, we aren't saying this is the case, but suspiciously may be an attempt to draw Syria and Iran in the war and therefore give the U.S. justification to conduct airstrikes on both those countries.
I mean, you think that there are some out there who think that this may be provocation against the rest of the rest of the Muslim world. I was going to say Arab world, except the Iranians aren't Arabs,
many,
they're Persians.
There are those analysts and followers of the neocons who believe that Israel is being used as a proxy to try to draw Syria and Iran into the war. At the same time, on the Karov side, this is a good cover for what is basically Iraq on the brink of complete chaos. The second point is that in that analysis which you mentioned, Bring On Armageddon, Bush is a believer that somehow out of chaos comes calm. This is what God did when he created the earth. Bush is not God.
Yeah, well, that's, yes, indeed, and thank God for it. Mark Carlin, BuzzFlash.com, the website. Mark, always great talking with you.
Great talking with you, Tom. Thanks.
Thank you. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Where was the passion when you needed the most? Oh, you and I. You kick up the leaves and the magic is lost.
because you had a bad day. You tend to walk down. You sing a sad song just to turn it around. You say you don't know. You tell me don't lie. You work at a smile and you go for a ride. You had a bad day. You see what you like. And how does it feel? One more time. You had a bad day. You had a bad day.
And welcome back, my friends. 9.5 minutes before the hour here at the Tom Hartmann Radio Program, the place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination, or at least some democracy with a small d. You know, the real thing, actually, the will of the people kind of thing. People getting together, people caring for each other. We're all in this together. What a radical idea. What an absolute radical idea. Jeffrey Smith writing over in the Washington Post yesterday. Actually, it was on Friday. He said an obscure law approved a decade ago by Republican-controlled Congress has made the Bush administration nervous that officials and troops involved in handling detainee matters might be accused of committing war crimes and prosecuted at some point in U.S. courts. This is the War Crimes Act of 1996, and it criminalizes violations of the Geneva Convention. So now you've got some folks in the Bush administration, senior officials, who are drafting legislation that Republicans are going to be one of these days soon trying to shove through Congress in the middle of the night, 2 o'clock in the morning on a Friday. Just wait. That will say, the Geneva Convention, they don't apply to us. Supreme Court, Washington Post notes, has, in contrast, repeatedly suggested U.S. courts should at least consider foreign interpretations of international treaties like the Geneva Conventions. Some human rights groups and independent experts say they oppose undermining the reach of the War Crimes Act, arguing that it deters government misconduct. Yes! If George W. Bush thinks he might be prosecuted as a war criminal, he's probably less likely to involve himself or us in war crimes. And wouldn't that be a nice thing? Meanwhile, Denmark. Denmark is the happiest place to live in the United States. Yeah, in the world. This is a study of 80,000 people worldwide to map out subjective well-being. And what's interesting, the list, the top of the list is Denmark, and then Switzerland, and then Austria, and then Iceland, and then the Bahamas. Those are the top five. The number 178, Burundi. The U.S. is 23rd, which ain't bad. But the question is, what is it that causes, what are the constants? What are the things that are absolutely consistent? Reading from the BBC report on this. A nation's level of happiness was most closely associated with health levels, access to health care, particularly free access to health care. Prosperity and education were the next strongest determinants of national happiness. So when Thomas Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, if happiness is one of our national goals, how do you achieve that? National health care. Free education all the way up through PhD, and prosperity by things like, maybe a minimum wage and a strong unions. How about some radical idea like trade policies that actually protect the domestic industries and keep American jobs in America? Could be. Jeff in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I just wanted to follow up on what Alec was talking about, the Chicago Living Wage Ordinance.
Yes, sir.
I represent America in Solidarity. I'm the education director.
Mm-hmm.
And we're committed to improving the lives of working families. And so for working people that make up our membership, a living wage ordinance is one of the best ways to ensure, the bare minimum of compensation for jobs with these companies that come in and they're huge and they change the whole character of the community.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so why not, force them to pay a decent wage?
Well, it's not even a matter of forcing them to pay a decent wage. It's saying, listen, you want to play the game of business? That's cool. You know, and
exactly.
we're giving you a lot of things. We're giving you some tax breaks here, and we've got the police department that's keeping track of traffic for you so that people can get to your store, and we've got the fire department keeping you safe. And I mean, we're providing you with a lot of services. All we ask is that you provide your employees with a decent wage. After all,
Absolutely. They're
the people who live in the community who are paying the taxes that are supporting you.
Amen.
Amen. Yeah.
That's why we're moving to follow up on this victory with a nationwide living wage campaign. And so we're going to be putting up some information on our website soon. Thought I'd let everybody know.
And the website is?
www.americasolidarity.org.
Americasolidarity.org,
yeah. Okay. Talk about togetherness and getting involved. That's one way to do it.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. Okay.
And also about the union label in China, can I just talk about that for a second?
Sure.
For me, I feel like a law has to be passed. Just, the same way if you want fair trade or organic, you have to be regulated, to make sure you are.
Yeah.
We should make sure that any company that has a union label, they're, 51% union, unions have to be totally democratic and not affiliated with the government. I mean, that'd be pretty easy, wouldn't it?
Well, you would think. Try getting that through the Republican Congress, though. I mean, this is a Republican Congress where, as you heard a little bit ago, the Republicans at 2:30 in the morning, when they attach poison pills to things like the minimum wage increase, then brag about it, saying you Democrats are just upset because we outfoxed you.
And people wonder why unions support the Democrats.
Yeah. Gee, what a surprise. Jeff, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening to us there on KPTK, Talk 1090 in Seattle. In fact, that's where I'll be broadcasting from live tomorrow out of Seattle. And tonight I'll be on stage with Bill Clinton and Jim McDermott. Should be great fun. Tomorrow I'll be debating conservative Andrew Coulson on the Republicans' push for national school vouchers. And Alexander Steele is here for a Berlusconi alert in his new book, The Sack of Rome. That and more in your calls here on the Tom Hartman Program. And remember, my friends, activism begins with you. Tag, you're it.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.